Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to start this meeting right now. We're not even a minute late. That's good. So, you're Stephanie. Well, would you please do roll call?
Okay. Astrid Berkson. Yes. Margaret White. Susan Fowler. Elaine Palencia, Tom Moore, Judy O'Connor, Julian Rappaport, Anne Robin, Deborah Townsend.
Okay, did you talk to? Any citizen input, public participation? Seeing none, we'll move along. Are there any additions to, not talking very well today, any additions to the agenda? Seeing none, we'll move right along. Any questions about the CCDDB information, which you have their minutes in your packet? And I see that Phil and Joyce are here to, and they can answer any questions you might have. Okay, thank you. Seeing none, I welcome a motion to approve our minutes from the last meeting, although they have been revised. I hope you all have had a chance to catch the revisions.
So that's the free handout, and it's not in the packet.
Yeah.
A slight revision.
It's on your desks. Is it something that needs to be pointed out at this time?
There's a small revision. Susan Fowler might.
The revision is a sentence, and I requested a revision to note that after we had that as part of the discussion about parliamentary procedure and public participation policy, that there was also a written response included in the board packet.
Did someone move to approve the minutes as revised? Thank you. And Peter?
There was a revision to the minutes this morning at the Developmental Disability Board meeting, which I think are pertinent to our situation here.
Our minutes or their minutes?
Their minutes, but we have the same thing, and it has to do with the, well, maybe it doesn't. Is it in there?
Okay.
The change that we made, it has to do with the letter that was sent to me, and it says, he read a letter from Peter Tracy stating his intent to cancel the automatic extension to his employment contract. And then, and what we wanted to do was end the sentence there after contract and delete that his final day of employment will be November 30, 2018.
That was good news, but not true.
So anyway, the change would be also to delete that part of the sentence.
Okay, will those who move to approve and second agree with those revisions?
It was November. It was November. Not.
These are already approved.
Yeah. It's not in the December minutes.
Okay. Then forget what I just said.
He takes it back. So, is there any confusion about what we would be approving? No. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, the same? Thank you. The minutes of the last meeting are approved. I would like to make a few comments. But before I do, let me introduce Elaine Palencia, our newest member to the Mental Health Board. Elaine, we're glad you're here. Thank you. And we have another new member, Margaret White, who is unable to be here today. She'll be here next week, next year, next month. There we go. I want to say several things. One is, this is January. It's been a tough year. It's been a very difficult year. We are now starting a new year. And I hope that the new year will be different and better for the mental health programs in this county. I'm very proud to be a member of this board, and I want to thank every single member of the board for the work that they have done and the difficulties that they have survived with grace and aplomb. I'm glad to still be with you another year, and I'm glad you're here, so thank you very much. If you look at your member list sometime, you'll see that I have a fax number. I haven't had a fax for years, so if you just want to ignore that, it will be fine. The other thing is, Phil and I are meeting this week. Phil, will that 2 o'clock tomorrow work out for you? Good. We're going to meet and work out a strategy for recruiting and selecting Peter's successor. We will keep you up to date on what we're doing, and you will be involved one way or another. My idea also, I haven't discussed it with Phil, but I think we should involve some non-board members who have experience in the mental health field, perhaps even on this board. But we need to talk about it, and I don't want to assume that Phil thinks that's a great idea. So you'll have a report next month, possibly sooner. Yes, Julian.
I just wondered if, to know, just a point of information, mm-hmm. is there a, who's responsible for this? Is it us? Is it the, does the county board have
No.
a role in it? Is there a set of procedures that we're supposed to follow?
No. I am glad you raised that, Julian. The Mental Health Board and the DD Board have total, complete, independent responsibility for finding Peter's successor. That answer it? Yeah. And that we really have a lot of latitude in how we go about it. The instructions are very, very, very broad. So we can do it pretty much the way we think we ought to do it. Okay? Any other? Yes.
So just, this is clarifying, it's probably repeating. That means that when the Mental Health Board and the DD Board come up with a recommendation, that recommendation is effective. There's no one that has to approve it.
That's right.
Okay.
That is correct. It says so right in the documents, yeah, in the MOU. That's correct. I think we'll probably introduce the new person to the county board, but we will choose that person ourselves. Okay? All right, executive director's comments.
We've received a question concerning applications. As you know, the application process has now started. And one of the questions had to do with intellectual and developmental disabilities applications and should agencies apply to one board or the other. And the basically what I'm going to do is send out a clarification notice to all of the providers that are in our system and recommend that they submit the applications to the Developmental Disabilities Board. And the point of that is that the two boards are supposed to do integrated planning, and through the executive committee and other processes that we have, we will make decisions about how the mental health board's share it is to be spent and which contracts it would be allocated to. This has been kind of a confusing thing for people. It will, from our standpoint, it won't change anything, but it'll make it clearer for the agencies. We won't have people doing double applications, and which is a real pain. So all of you that are out there, if you are submitting a application for the developmental, for developmental disabilities or intellectual disabilities, submit them to the Developmental Disabilities Board, and they will be considered by both boards. That's it.
Thank you, Peter. Staff reports. You've had a chance to read the three reports that were very enlightening, and I wonder if anybody on this board has a question for any of the reporters. Okay. Oh, Susan?
The question really refers back to the new meeting with the DD board, and I'd like to direct it to Lynn. One of the comments that came up was that the young adults who are served at SWAN, who have exceeded the age of 18 now, aren't counted in our county, and they're not in this data. Should they be in this data because they live in Champaign County or not?
I have to follow directions. Turn the mic on.
Oh, right.
They do live in this county, and some of them originate from this county, some do not, but they're residents of the county now. So we should have that information, but where we went first for data was to the Regional Planning Commission Independent Service Coordination Unit, and they are involved with everybody who has Medicaid waiver funding, DD Medicaid waiver funding. So that's what the report is, and that's side by side with the state's PONS report. So on the PONS list there, those three or four pages are regarding unmet need.
Okay.
And so this was to present a total picture of people waiting for services through DHS DD.
Okay.
I'm not sure where we would find the data for SWAN, except to approach SWAN directly and ask them who they're serving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know if the county had obligations or if they were on the PUNS list or mm-hmm. if they were already.
I think those are great questions. That was an interesting point made this morning by a citizen. So,
thank you. Before we leave this part of our agenda, I hope you all read the paper this morning. Was it this morning's paper or yesterday's about Chandra? Didn't you get a huge, huge, huge award? Aren't you going to travel?
Oh.
Are you not going to travel? Words. You've turned it down. Oh, no.
No.
Would you say about a minute's worth?
Yes, I will. Thank you. I was trying to figure out which thing. You were talking about and what was in the paper. So I am a member of the Champaign Rotary Club, and I was selected to be a part of their group study exchange that will travel to Romania, and I will be going over learning about their culture there and beginning to look at how systems are over there, and then bring the information back to this community so that we can share it and see what the differences are. But it's an exchange with another team, so they'll be coming over here, and then we'll be going over there.
That's just great, Chandra. Congratulations. And we are We're giving you some time off to do this, aren't we?
I appreciate that.
Well,
thank you.
What else are we going to do? Come on. It's just a wonderful opportunity for you and for us. So, thank you. All right. Do we have a consultant? Oh, sorry, Mark. Yeah.
I just had an addition to my staff report, and I just wanted to give the board a heads up that I've heard from the program evaluators, and they are interested in doing interviews, individual interviews with board members. So I just wanted to let you know that they'll be in contact with you and schedule a time to do an interview with you about evaluation. The interviews, I think, in terms of just kind of making it a bit more convenient, they'll set up a time with you and probably hold the interview either in our office or in a meeting room elsewhere in the building here.
Mark, could you remind us under whose aegis this is being done?
Oh, this is this would be the work by Drs. Allen and Aber, and it's the program evaluation. They've actually been meeting with a group of agencies, funded mental health board funded agencies, and been meeting with them. They're going to survey the agencies. They've also completed, it's my understanding, they've completed a review of the performance outcome reports and other data that Lynn and I have provided to them, and they'll have a draft of that forthcoming, but as part of this process, they wanted to have an opportunity to meet with board members and talk about evaluation and what your expectations were.
Good. So, thank you. Oh.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Don't be nervous. So, it's okay.
I mean, that's the way the communication came to me, and so.
Thank you, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Townsend.
Excuse me, where did that come from?
Oh, from me.
Yeah, Shonda.
I just wanted to make sure that it was noted in my staff report that the cultural competence plan template was presented to you all, and I wanted to make sure I highlighted the changes that were major changes this year. One of the things that we will be looking for is interagency collaboration and how that's being done on the plan. And then also, that's on page 23. And also on page 28, below is a list of the actual guidelines that actually should be steps within the individual organization cultural competency plans. And this year, you will be getting a lot more information about the review of the plans than you have in the past. And you'll be receiving this in April. And what we have decided is places where organizations who are receiving funding or who are awarded, you all choose to award funding to, we will, if they are deficient or may have some improvements, we will do some contractual provisions, and I'll be working with them and supporting them so that we can ensure that their plan is up to the standard that we have set.
Sean, is this board is this board subject to the cultural and linguistic competency? I mean, do we have to submit to that ourselves?
Yes, and we're working toward that, and I've talked with Peter on ways that we can come up with a plan ourselves, and so we can talk about that with the leadership about what it would look like for the boards. Yes.
Thank you, Chandra. Is there a consultant in the room? Seeing no consultants today, we'll move on to board-to-board reports. Are there any board-to-board reports? You know, did you go out and meet with a board and or observe a meeting? And is there anything exciting that you want to share with us? Doesn't even have to be exciting. It just could be interesting. No? Okay, none to the...
I have one...
Julian.
One observation that since actually both Mark and Lynn attend this meeting as well with the various police agencies in this community, and just before the last meeting, they're also, which progress was reported, and I think they're doing good work, there was a very nice editorial, I almost fainted, in the News Gazette, praising our crisis intervention training here and the police who are involved in it. And I think it was nice to get some public recognition for the fact that they actually do some good stuff here. Not everything is terrible. So I just thought we should notice in the spirit of observing what's become public. And I think that we're actually... I'll just say this myself. They didn't say that in the editorial, but I think that this board has been an important part in making that and helping that to happen. So I'm kind of proud of us and our still current director.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Julian. Quickly.
Directly related to that, I've had requests from Douglas and McLean and Ford County law enforcement to learn more and maybe borrow some talent or subcontract some talent for CIT training and for mental health first aid for law enforcement. So it's interesting when I step out of Champaign County, I do see that what we're doing here is important to our neighbors.
Let's see, under agency information, I'd like to begin with Dr. James Gilmore.
Kilgore.
His what?
Gilgore.
Gilgore. I'm sorry. I apologize. I really do know your name. Marlon Mitchell. And we're glad to have you here today.
Thank you all for having us. Good evening, everybody. Hope everybody's staying warm. It's got all the snow shoveled up out of walkway and the driveways. Like Mrs. Townsend said, my name is Marlon Mitchell. I'm here with James Kilgore. He's the co-director, and I'm the co-director as well of an agency here in Champaign County. Actually, it's in Champaign, situated in Champaign, called First Followers, which is a not-for-profit organization that deals with reentry of those individuals that have been criminally involved or justice involved, reentering back into the community. So what we're here today is just, we wanted to pass a little information along to you all in the form of a presentation about some of the research that we've been doing and also some of the findings that we've had and some of the experiences that we've had since we've opened our doors since March of 2015. So, James, wanna?
So, the beginning part, we're gonna talk a little bit about kind of a theoretical approach to our work. I mean, a lot of you, I'm sure, are familiar with the fact that there's, you know, many people who are in prisons and jails with mental health issues. But what we want to talk about and what's important for our work is the notion of how being incarcerated affects someone's mental health, particularly as they come back into the community. So we've been using this notion of post-incarceration syndrome. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about what that consists of. So basically, this is something that affects people who are incarcerated, particularly those who are incarcerated for a long period of time. I think it's developed in response to the prison environment. And I think there's three things that kind of are behind post-incarceration syndrome. The first is the institutionalization in the prison. That is, in terms of adapting to an environment where decisions are basically made by the institution for the individual. So people don't have the power to decide basic things about their life, when they eat, when they go outside, when they can talk to friends, when they can talk on the phone, and obviously when they can move. So there's a disempowerment, and that on one hand often creates some kind of passivity, that is, people feel unable to make decisions, or they lose that kind of initiative, and that disempowerment, along with other things in the environment, can also lead to the opposite, and that is aggressive behavior towards staff or toward colleagues in the prison. The second part of this is isolation, the separation from loved ones, from community, from things that are familiar. And I think it's very important to talk about the impact of solitary confinement, which is used in prisons and jails across this country as, in some cases, as a short-term disciplinary measure, but in many cases, it becomes the permanent part of someone's incarceration experience. So this man that you see in the picture is a man named Brian Nelson, who has, according to his experiences, spent 23 years in solitary confinement in the Illinois Department of Corrections. And he's filed a suit against the IDOC. He's going to be actually speaking about his experience in Champaign at the Champaign Public Library on February 9th at, I think, 6 p.m. So you might want to hear him talk a little bit about the impact of isolation on him during those 23 years. And we've seen in recent times an institution, TAMS, one of the state prisons, which basically was a pure isolation institution, has been shut down because of the impact of long-term isolation on individuals that were incarcerated there. And then the third aspect is the sort of trauma of prison experience. And that is, I mean, some people say that incarceration in some ways causes some kind of PTSD. And a lot of things that happen in prison can contribute to or cause mental illness. There's violence in prison. That's not a surprise to people. Sometimes it may be directed against an individual, but it also may be something that an individual witnesses, which is also traumatizing. There's social pressure on people to conform to certain ways of behaving in prison, and there's also large elements of humiliation in terms of the ways in which people are treated in prison. You become a number instead of a name. You have to wear certain kind of institutional clothing, and maybe you have to walk with your hands behind your back. Maybe you have to walk along a wall. There's a whole range of things that are kind of humiliating kinds of behavior, which can be traumatic in the long run. And because of the nature of some aspects of prison culture, people are forced to kind of repress whatever the effects of these are. It's quite often, particularly in men's prisons, it's quite often seen as a sign of weakness and may make you vulnerable if you show the fact that all of this experience is impacting you. So you have to repress that, and that has a long-term psychological effect and a long-term effects on mental health, which may spill out into the time when you go into the community.
So now I want to just talk a little bit about not only this theoretical framework that's this research has been done on, but we also want to talk about our experiences that first followers that we experience from individuals that come in to our drop-in center. As they come in, we first sit them down. We do a sort of a self-assessment, and through conversations, we always notice that most of our clients are very reserved. And so through our questionnaires and us just interviewing them maybe 15 to 20 minutes, they begin to loosen up a little bit. But these are some of the symptoms, as James explained, that we see from individuals coming in. And many times we also note, or they let us know that they have certain needs, certain basic needs, and that they feel that they're under pressure a lot of times in a lot of stressful situation, because of the stigma that comes along with those that have been formerly incarcerated or have been involved with the criminal justice system. So some of the things that we provide is just that basic conversation, trying to have them open up and kind of just let us know about their stories. Because what we do with our model is we're mentoring based. We're not a caseworker. We try to come down to the level or get on the ground level of what's really going on within their behaviors. We've noticed that many of them that come through a lot of times have been incarcerated several times. And so we kind of gauge some of our questions and some of our conversations around why is the recidivism there. And it basically boils down to a lot of times is that the pressure and the stigma that follows them once they return home, the pressures of trying to get a job, the stigma that the society has as in general of that comes along with being incarcerated, that everybody that has been incarcerated are bad people. So we have these conversations, and what we try to do is just empower them or help them empower themselves to overcome some of these self-esteem issues that they may have and different behavioral patterns that they exude with us. So just to give you an example, for earlier this week, well, actually late last week, we had an individual who was incarcerated when he was 13 years old come through our doors, and now he's 21 years old. And he came in with his mother, and at that same time, when he came in at his mother, she did all the talking for him. So we sat down, we had maybe a half an hour conversation about his basic needs and the things that he was looking for. And maybe 15 or 20 minutes into the conversation, then he started to open up just a bit. But we continue to stay in contact with some of our clients because we understand the struggles that they do go through and some of the stigmas that they have to face day to day just trying to find the basic needs of housing, basic needs of trying to get a job, and the basic needs of trying to provide for themselves and their families. So as you can see from the screen right here, we just want to take you a little bit back, and this kind of goes along with Mrs. Townsend's comment about a fax machine and about how fast technology moves. So a lot of times when a person is incarcerated, the world keeps moving. And it was just, 20-something years ago, back in 1989, when we first had the internet. And many of our clients that come through the door do not know how to sit behind a computer, do not know how to navigate these spaces of trying to find a job or filling out an online application. And sometimes they can't even work a smartphone. And as you can see, through the years, technology moves further and further along, and many of these individuals are being passed by opportunities.
Yeah, they're still using the boom boxes.
So as you can see here in Champaign County, about 40% of the population released every year, about 509 people are on parole from the IDOC. And part of our services is trying to connect these individuals with just the basic services like I mentioned earlier, housing, jobs, even just a state ID. But we've tried to provide this emotional support to help kind of bridge that gap between some of the missing components that they've missed out on throughout the years of incarceration and some of that reclusion that they feel. So we just wanted to just bring this all home and just kind of connect the dots between this theoretical framework and then the things that we have experienced since we've had our doors open in the last 12 months.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the peer mentoring piece is very important to us. I mean, most of the people that are working in our program are people who have been through the system. And as we've put it here in the slide, it says, a mentor helps you see the beauty in your dreams. That is, it's trying to open doors to people that they have felt have been closed for a long period of time. So that's part of the work that we do. And by being people who have been through some of the processes that our clients are experiencing, we feel that we can reach out to them in a different kind of way.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate your coming back to talk with us.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, we have just a few minutes for questions, if you have any. Just, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. Well, you know, Susan.
Could you tell us a little bit about how many people are involved with the program? You've only been around for 9 months, so
first followers,
do you have 20 people, 10 people, 30 people?
So since we've opened our doors, we've serviced maybe 65 to 70
wow.
individuals. Not all of them are from the IDOC. We've had individuals that have come home from the Bureau of Prisons, and that is the federal penitentiaries. Then we also have had clients that have come from the local county jail here in Champaign County.
Mr. Mitchell, can you tell me something about the ID? The need for an ID is what? And what does the ID say that they can get? Does it indicate that they may be a felon? Or what
no,
is
actually,
the ID?
Individuals that are incarcerated or that have come home from the Illinois Department of Incarceration have an ID. But many times this ID is not recognized as far as with job applications or job interviews. So many times we have individuals that come home that need the basic necessity of ID, maybe it's a state ID or a driver's license. And we all know that without that, you can't go into a job interview or secure a job. So many times what we do is, first of all, we have to get the necessary identification, whether it's social security cards, birth certificates, and things like that, and we kind of have to work backwards from there to acquire an Illinois state ID.
And that was particularly difficult when they moved the Champaign Secretary of State office to Monticello and Rantoul for those few months. So we were actually ferrying people out to the offices and helping them get the ID and helping them come up with the $20 as required.
Elaine.
Yeah, could you say just a little bit more about how the peer mentoring works? Are you having group sessions, or do people self-select to be mentors, or how is that done?
Okay. I mean, to date, we've mostly been working one-on-one. Mm-hmm. I mean, our intention is to build on that and to do different kinds of groups that would help build the capacity of people both to mentor but also to become advocates in the mm-hmm. community. But that's kind of our next phase. We've kind of used this first year to build build some understanding of how all this works, and now we're going to try to do more things. We have had a couple of workshops on job preparation and so forth, where mm-hmm. we've had some where we've done peer mentoring, but we haven't set up a consistent set of support groups and things like that, which we intend to do in the next year of operation.
Okay, thank you.
And just to piggyback on that a little bit, we have 5 mentors that work with us on a continual basis. So it's not just me and James that's doing all of this work. We do have like 4 or 5 other volunteers.
Well, thank you so much for coming. You've informed us very well, and some of us have been doing a lot of reading in this area, and it's been very enlightening. And I encourage everybody who hasn't been doing some reading to do so, and I'm sure books can be suggested easily, yeah. So thank you.
Hey, before you leave, could you tell us again where you're located and how someone can get in touch with you?
Yeah, so we're operating out of Bethel AME Church, which is located at 401 East Park Street in Champaign. We run a drop-in center on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and those hours of operation are 1 p.m. to 5 o'clock p.m.
You go in the back door?
The side door. The door that's facing 4th Street. That's parallel to 4th Street.
Good. Thanks, Tom, for asking it. Yes, Astrid.
And for people who are looking for a book, James's book is a pretty good start.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Knapp from Community Choices, and you guys provide some funding for us out of the DD, the developmental disability portion of your funding. So just wanted to tell you about a grant we secured from another source, so not asking for any money, but just giving you an update on something we're really excited about. It's called Open Champaign, and the focus is to find groups in the community. So like, for example, we found a poetry club and a group of artists, the Up Center, different groups that exist, and to partner with people with developmental disabilities to do some community building activities. So that is, we're in year one right now, and we just found out that we received an extension. So that will start in June. And the focus will be that same work of helping people with developmental disabilities be involved in the community. But the focus in year two will be minorities with developmental disabilities, because we know that is an underserved population and one that you guys have certainly helped us identify. So just want to let you know that we're doing that. And if you know of any just community groups that might be open to including people with developmental disabilities or would be interested in partnering for some community activities, please let me know. Thanks.
Jennifer, thank you very much. Thanks. Any other? All right, well, we'll move ahead then to the financial information. You've had a chance to review the report submitted to us by Nancy Crawford. And I'll welcome a motion to accept the claims report as presented. Thank you, Astrid. Second. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Anne. I've known her for years.
That's all right.
Any questions? Discussion? Are there changes?
Oh, yeah.
There were a few mistakes.
Changes in what we have?
Yeah.
And they're important.
I apologize if we went over this morning and I forgot about it. Page 36. Basically, we have some reports related to drug court and the delinquency prevention grants that we no longer manage, and the reports are in here. So. If you would amend the motion and delete page 36, 38, and 39, we're cool.
36, 38, and 39.
Correct.
Friendly amendment?
Friendly amendment.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. Delete. 36, 38.
And we will no longer get these reports in the future, where, you know, so that we'll be not have this happen again.
Well, thank goodness. I'm kidding. I am kidding. I hope you know. So all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, the same? Thank you. We have accepted the claims report as amended. Moving ahead, it is time to elect officers for the year 2016. Before we get into this, are there any questions about what we do? I'll welcome a nomination for the board president. Tom.
I've sat on this board for a while now. I can't recall how long it is. And in that time, our current president, Dr. Deborah Townsend, has done what I think of as a great job with keeping this board focused and keeping us moving in what I think is the right direction. And as she noted when she began this meeting, that this has been a pretty tough year, last 2 years at least, for the mental health board and DD board, and I think she's done a great job in keeping us together through those efforts. So I would like to put her name in nomination for president for this board.
Thank you.
Do we need a second?
Aye. And we post the same. Thank you for your confidence. I appreciate it. You're a good boy. I feel very fortunate. Okay. taken care of sometimes. I welcome a nomination for vice president / secretary.
I have a nomination.
Julian.
I'd like to nominate Susan Fowler as vice, what's the right word, vice president?
Mm-hmm. Yes, / secretary.
Uh-huh. / secretary.
Yeah. Thank you, Astrid. Any discussion? Are you willing?
I am.
Are there any other nominations? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those, any opposed, the same? The motion is carried. Susan, welcome. Now we're going to put her to work. Okay. Thank you. We'll do the best we can. I'm not sure what you want to do with section B here about the JMHCP.
The presentation we have. We have Bruce Barnard.
Oh, I am sure what we want to do. I'm sorry. I got a little rattled, I guess. Yeah.
You're reading your clippings.
Peter, shame on you. That's awful. Okay.
I'm Bruce Barnard, a consultant working for Community Elements on criminal justice issues and...
Bruce, excuse me, could you speak up a little?
Sure. I'm Bruce Barnard, working with Community Elements on criminal justice issues as a consultant, and Alan Jones is with me to update you on the Justice and Mental Health Collaboration Program. It is a project that's funded by a federal grant. I want to thank the board for providing the funding for the grant writing for that grant opportunity, and pleased to report that we were successful in attaining those funds. Also want to thank you for providing the match funds, which were required for us to receive the federal assistance, and the staff who've been very supportive in participating in the process, Mark Driscoll especially, who is a member of the Reentry Council and also a member of the Justice and Mental Health Collaboration Project. There were five counties funded nationwide, so we're very proud of the fact that Champaign County was selected to be part of this process. It is essentially a planning process to reduce the prevalence of persons with mental illness in the jails. There is a lot of exciting things happening right now across the country. Department of Justice is very interested in collaborative approaches. A requirement for this grant was that it be a partnership between a public agency or a county, a unit of government, and a mental health provider. We have already attended a conference in Washington, D.C., which was a very exciting opportunity. It started out with a very small number because it was just the folks participating in justice and mental health collaboration. But by Wednesday, it had blossomed to 1,500 people who were working on reentry issues, criminal justice collaborations, mental health jail partnership funding. It was a really exciting opportunity for us to meet some folks across the country who are doing this work. And I have to tell you that I came away from that with a sense that the progress that we've made in Champaign County is truly remarkable. Many of the presentations that I attended regarding best practices and what is happening in communities that are showing really exciting results, the seeds of those things have already been sown in Champaign County, and we're already working on those things. So I came back feeling very positive about what we've done, the partnership that we have with the Sheriff's Office, the work that we've done on reentry has really moved us in the right direction. So as I said, the grant is from the Department of Justice. The awardee is Champaign County. The amount awarded was $149,999. The maximum was $150,000, so I'm not sure how we didn't get that extra dollar. It is for 24 months, but one of the really exciting things about it for me is that technical assistance is provided, and the technical assistance is through the Council of State Governments. And our technical assistance providers are people who have been where we are and have done this work. They are people who have been county administrators in counties that have gone through a planning process and developed programming. They are people who have a knowledge of mental health. So I think we have a great opportunity. The project is jointly administered by the Champaign County Sheriff's Office and Community Elements. Essentially, it puts together a council, which is representative, and I'll show you that in a minute, to look at all of the areas that in basically where people may interface with the criminal justice system. One of the things I believe that made our application stand out is that we arranged for a collaborative consultant who was not part of any of the agencies or entities. His role is specifically to help us work together as a group. That's his only role. So he is a consultant. I serve as a project director in a very limited role of 4 hours a week. Celeste Blodgett, who is also working with the reentry program, will be working with this program halftime. So once this is up and going, she will be working halftime with the reentry project and halftime with this program. And network administration is essentially a way of looking at overhead for community elements. And the data consultant is a very key position. One of the real challenges, and I know Alan will back me up on this, we've had a lot of discussion and a lot of meetings about the data that we have related to criminal justice and how to use it effectively for planning purposes to understand outcomes. It's a huge issue. It's not just us. Every county that I talked to who also received this funding identified it as the same issue. So as we identify what our needs are and know what it is we want, there is funding there to purchase some consulting services to help us address those issues. Basically, the activities are to convene a crisis response planning committee, which includes representatives from law enforcement, citizen representatives, consumer advocacy organizations, mental health providers, to try and get a grasp on what is going on in the system and go through the system mapping process together. Identify gaps, common definitions, screening and engagement, look at the possibility of an assessment center or diversion center that we've talked about in this county, enhance law enforcement, and additional strategies. It is a multi-year funding opportunity. The planning process comes first. After that process is completed, we have an opportunity to apply for system implementation funds from the Department of Justice, and that's a maximum of $250,000. After you complete your program or system implementation, you have an opportunity to apply for program extension dollars, and that's a maximum of $200,000. So the Department of Justice is making a significant investment in Champaign County with the initial planning funding, and we hope that they will continue that investment and want to use this county as a demonstration for what can happen when all the parties come together with a comprehensive system mapping process and a strategic plan to address these issues. So this is just a list of the initial crisis response planning committee. You'll see there's county board members on there, members from the mental health board, state's attorney, jail administrators, law enforcement, NAMI, CIT, to try and have folks there who have the information, have the experience from all aspects of the system. There is a very specific target population which was part of the funding solicitation, and it is individuals who have been diagnosed as having a mental illness or co-occurring mental health and substance use disorder and have faced, are facing, or could face criminal charges for a misdemeanor or felony that is a nonviolent offense. That is the target population that the Department of Justice required that we attach and look at. So this is just the goals and objectives. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but as I said, it basically involves reaching consensus around program goals, developing a work plan, and having strategies to reduce the incidence of persons with mental illness in the county jail. And Alan, you want to talk a little bit about where we're at right now with the process?
Well, we can, yeah, before we get to questions, first, as you know, I'm Alan Jones with the Sheriff's Office, and I appreciate the time and effort, and especially the match funds that you guys have approved and stepped forward to make this happen. Going out to Washington, it was really nice and comfortable to be able to sit down with folks and say, well, this is how this happened. We didn't have to beg, borrow, and steal. We had a board who was willing to get us to that point, and that's not something that was common among all the grantees out there. There were a lot of people pulling money from a lot of places. So the cooperation so far has been outstanding, many ways trendsetting, trying to get us all moving together. We have a couple different things going on. We've tried to get, how do you say this, SAMHSA, system mapping grant. We were rejected with that. We were hoping to get that. That would be part of it, where they'd come in and do some time where we can actually do the intercepts and map that out. So we're going to have to add that into our planning process at some point in time. We currently have an application in through the National Association of Counties and NAMI and a Stepping Up initiative that this board passed the resolution in support of that, along with the county board and the Stepping Up initiative. We've adopted those resolutions. So again, we're right out there in the front, chasing after some of the national trends that we're seeing. Obviously, there's some challenges, and Bruce mentioned that the data and trying to find a way to, we have records at the sheriff's office in the county, in the justice system, that we can readily share. Our providers, whether it be our partners through Presence or Community Elements or Prairie Center or Pavilion, and all the other providers have different limitations, federal laws and standards on what can be shared and how we can do that. Health information exchange, information points, and some of these other things are going to be a key strategy we have to get to. But one of the things that I've noted about the challenges is, much like even that we've seen in this community, and I've said this several times, there are many different agencies and folks and groups and entities trying to go in all these different directions, and our job is to try to get us all spearheaded to one point so we're all working the same thing. We're starting now to see it in reentry. We have a county level reentry and we have a local group. So we've got to find a way to keep these at the tip of a spear, as opposed to competing interests coming about. And that's been one of the challenges as we try to form this group and push this through, is to get us all moving in the same direction. So I've got to be clear and unequivocal from the sheriff's office perspective. We've got to find a way to remove the justice-involved piece of getting into these programs and these initiatives that we've been providing. The programs that we have now, all funded out of here, or just started in part, funded in part out of this board, all have that. So we're trying to find a way that they don't have to come to the sheriff's jail to get into these programs. And so we're going to continue to find ways to address that. And you're going to be integral in that process as we move forward. So challenges never seem to go away. Roadblocks or speed bumps, however you want to say it. We were awarded this in, notified of the award in September of 2015. Grant period started October 1st of 2015. The specific contract stated to us that we were allowed to use a specific amount of money, drawdown only, for travel to the grant training, which was held in December. And until such time as the government approved our budget, which we submitted with our application in April, we weren't allowed to officially incur any debt or obligations. Well, we're now 3.5 months into it, and the federal government still has not approved our budget. And we have been working, Community Elements has been, I call it, walking on the edge, taking a leap of faith, if you will. They've been allowing this work, and it's been going on, and we can't reimburse at this point in time because of the contract. So we've reached a tough point. Once we've got the momentum going here now, we're pleased to be here. This week we had to make a decision that we're probably going to have to scale back and stop until this budget gets done. I then got word late, what's today, Wednesday? I've lost track, Tuesday, that our budget's been moved to the next level. Now I'm still waiting on the official notification in the system. So I may have an answer by Friday. Either way, I want you to know that if I don't have a budget approval by Friday, I'll be seeking some assistance from Peter and others to contact some of our Congress friends to see if we can't get some pressure on the chief financial officer to try to get this done. So again, you know, almost 4 months into it. So I'm frustrated extremely. I hope you can sense that in my tone and posture. However, the work that's been done and will continue to be done is fantastic, and I appreciate your support in that. So now, questions.
Wow. You're undertaking a major thing here.
Yeah, and we are.
Yes, we are. We all are, and we're with you.
Yeah. All right.
Are there questions?
I have a question.
Sure, Julian.
Great work, by the way. But I'm just curious. I was looking at the list of the planning committee, and is there some reason that the Urbana and Champaign police are not a part of this?
What we see, and you can see it in the reentry, the police chiefs and the police departments meet so frequently, and there's so many different meetings that basically what they do at the administration level is share representation. Chief Pat Conley is a representative of the police agencies on reentry. Jeff Christensen has not been on any of these communities, and he wanted specifically to be involved. So the Brian Tyson is like the steering committee representative from Crisis Intervention. So it's a shared vision. Letters of support have been issued by all the chiefs, and they are firmly behind us, and I continue to keep them updated in the process.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Mark had a question.
Mark, thank you.
Before the presentation, I had mentioned that I would be asking them, or would ask that they share a little bit about their experience at the conference and what they learned from some of the other grantees, as well as some of the research that they heard about. I think there may also be a question about the representation on the committee and whether there's an opportunity for the African-American population to be represented. And so I think that's a question that you might want to address first and then talk about the conference.
Sure. The committee that you see listed there was put together as part of the grant application that we initially submitted. And the names, not all the names, had actually been filled in. We have sought membership from NAMI, and we also recently put out a call. I did a couple news pieces as well as press releases seeking for public citizen participant to be on the committee. We received four people who submitted the information. We share the question of diversity, if that's what came here and that's what you're speaking of, none of which in our applications that were made public came in that provided that opportunity. There are many opportunities moving forward because this group will expand with the consultant itself and Bruce. They will actually be working in task groups throughout the summer. I updated you guys about an initiative we had going on in the community where we didn't even have grant funding, but we were working forward. And those groups, the systems groups and other terms that we used, will all be brought into this. So absolutely encouraging, welcoming that involvement, waiting for the opportunities present itself to make that happen. Now, conference, anything further on that? Yes, sir.
That was a question that I had when I looked over the committee, and it could be based on a set of wrong assumptions. but as I think about a jail population, that there are a group of African Americans in that population that I assume that this program is going to serve. And it's distressing to find out that there aren't any representatives of that group on this committee. Now, you may be fine in going out looking for something and put them on, but if you're going to be serving a whole bunch of people of that nature, then they should have some representation in the planning of this. And you got a gentleman sitting right behind you who could be a great resource. He already talked about a bunch of the things you guys are looking at trying to find out. He knows the answers to that. So I hope that you do move quickly in adding more than just one minority person to this to this list.
Well, when we talk about task groups, one of the things that we're talking about is specific areas of concern. So one of those task groups will actually be persons who have a history of incarceration or participation in the jail. Also specific areas of concern. So, I mean, we certainly appreciate and understand the concern. But as Alan said, the group that will be participating in this process will be much larger than the group that is on that list.
Other questions?
This, and we want to hear about the experience in D.C. also, but this actually came up at our last board meeting here, and that was the question about, in your target population definition, it says individuals who have been diagnosed, and my question is, what exactly does that mean? What about people that have significant substance use disorders that have not been diagnosed and have not come to the attention? And, you know, that goes for people with mental health issues, too.
Well, and here's the way I look at that is, and one of the things that I handed out was a sequential intercept model, so you could take a look at that, which talks about points where people come in contact with the criminal justice system and potential interventions at each stage. And while the target population for this grant is very specific, when a community starts a process of system mapping and looking at how people are interfacing with the criminal justice system, you can't limit yourself to only people who have, like, for example, when we talk about CIT as a solution, yes, CIT is going to interface with people who meet this target population. They're also going to interface with other people. So I think it's kind of overly limiting to think that we would only look at that target population, and I don't think there's anybody on the crisis response planning group that would see the planning process as being that limited. I hope that answers your question.
It does. I'm glad you answered it.
Y'all want me to tell you what I told Mark? There's a written report in your file. We had a good time at the conference. Listen, Bruce talked about it, and I don't think you understood, but seriously, we started on Monday, and it was a small group of folks that had been the Justice and Mental Health Collaboration Grants for 14 and 15. And then the conference grew bigger and bigger, and they brought in the Second Chance Act folks. So they streamlined 2 years worth of conferences and multiple grants through DOJ into the process. And having the opportunity to split out in the groups to meet the technical providers, to talk about the data pieces, to hear other counties and other issues that they're facing across the country. For us, several different things came to light. You know, Celeste authored the report that's in there to hit some of the things, and I'm not even going to come close to that. But for me, when I walked away, there was a couple different things about housing in Champaign County and housing, the housing authority. The National Housing Authority is talking about they want to expand to allow those with convictions to be able to have, you know, can stay in these homes. Champaign County Housing Authority doesn't allow that. So, you know, that's a reentry issue, yet it has direct relations to what we're doing here at our conference. Other things we talked about came from the CIT Steering Committee is that there's a, you know, we have here in the community, we have crisis response teams, that are 24 hours basically, or can be brought about, but some agencies will actually have a caseworker that co-responds with the police in some of those issues. So there's a lot of different ways to do this, but again, from us, we continue, and I continue to look for ways to have those resources that don't require arrest or police involvement, that the families have an option to have a place to self-refer or to family refer, and the police don't need to be involved in that.
Hopefully you have an electronic copy of the report, because those links that Celeste included after each section is actually a link to a recording of the plenary sessions. The plenary sessions were all recorded and they're available on a YouTube channel. And some of those are truly exceptional, and I really encourage you to follow those and listen to those plenary sessions. There's some really amazing things that are being tried across the country. Some of the greater understanding of the risk needs responsivity and assessment tools, evidence-based assessment tools, there was a plenary session on that. There was a plenary session on family involvement, which was outstanding. But much of what I looked at was the system mapping process, because that's primarily what we are going to be going through as a county, and had an opportunity to talk to both counties that have been through the process and counties that are in the process right now. And some of the limitations and frustrations that we're feeling are definitely shared across the country. I did attend an excellent breakout session on research and outcomes, and I had talked to Mark a little bit about that in terms of some of the recommendations that I think would be very helpful to us. One thing that I learned was that when you're writing a federal grant, which we will be doing again in another couple of months, it makes sense to actually include an extra year in your research proposal, so that as your data comes in, you actually have the funding for that. Don't know why that had never occurred to us in any of the federal grants that we put in, but that it was one of the recommendations of the panel. Another recommendation was for groups such as ourselves to develop relationships with specific research groups, and so that they become familiar with the strategies that you're using, the challenges that you're facing, and can actually begin to know the staff and have a more effective research relationship in the long term.
Oh, that wasn't.
Thumbs up.
That's just this. Okay. Well, thank you ever so much for coming and sharing all that with. We'll be very excited to see how this develops and ways that we can help.
If you guys are wildly successful, does that mean that the jail population itself will be reduced?
I will tell you this, the jail population now is down compared to what it has been in all the efforts, and a lot of it has to do with, again, the fundings that we have outside of this. What this is going to do is going to give families in this community, especially in this type of community, the fact that we don't have something like this or self-referral can exist and we remove police involvement, wildly successful would be a great place to be.
Please turn on your mic.
I just wanted to make clear this Housing Authority of Champaign County rule against ex-felons is a local rule. It has not come from above. It's a local rule to make their lives easier, and I hope you will push against it, because family support is so important for reentry.
This is reentry business, not necessarily justice and mental health collaboration, but we have a meeting tomorrow. One of the things that we have suggested to the Housing Authority is a demonstration project, similar to what's happening in New York and Chicago, to have a partnership between reentry case management, service providers, peer mentoring, to provide housing opportunities for people who are participating in that, and then measure the recidivism as a consequence and compared to the recidivism amongst the general population.
And Bruce, could you kind of put some context into what that demonstration would be part of in terms of the intention to it?
Sure. So the reason that we're really interested in trying to get that agreement in place now is that the Reentry Council and Community Elements and our partners in that will be once again applying for a federal second chance grant to provide reentry services specifically for people with mental illness and substance use disorders. That is another Department of Justice funding opportunity. It's one that we've applied for in the past, and we have tried to use Department of Justice funding to fund some supportive housing, and the review comments have made it pretty clear that that will not be a path for us to receive the funding, that they want housing dollars supporting housing. We've done some other things in terms of requesting funding for supportive housing on our own, but that is tied up with the state budget right now, which probably means never. So working with the Housing Authority in a demonstration project is probably our best path forward right now to receiving a Second Chance Act grant.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of questions as we go along in the future and sort of keep track. We hope we'll be able to keep track of how things are going.
And we have a great relationship, the Sheriff Walsh and I at the Sheriff's Office, with Peter and Mark and Lynn.
If you ever
have a question, call or email us or stop by, come see us, have a cup of coffee. We will gladly go over anything we can anytime.
Great.
They know how to find us.
Count on it.
Lots of it.
I did. Okay. Next topic is cultural and linguistic competence update. And you have a report in your packet.
This is for reference only. What I wanted to make sure that you were aware of is that these are actual guidelines that Department of Human Services had required for all of their organizations to do. And so we are beginning to kind of line ours up and make them linear. One, this will be easier for organizations so that they will not have to do two separate reports. However, we also want to make sure that we are staying within. So if we've asked for something in Champaign County that the state hadn't required yet, we're still going to keep in with what we require. But I wanted to make sure that with reporting that it aligned with what the state is requiring. And so I wanted to provide you with the guidelines for the state of Illinois and their subcontractors and their vendors so that you could be aware of that. And also let you know that we have been basically setting the blueprint for this already. I believe personally that they probably saw what we did because of our system of care grant and then begin to develop as a result, because we did participate in a lot of those calls. So I just wanted you all to be aware that that is happening at the state level.
Is this date correct, November 20th, 2008?
Correct. These were the actual recommendations that came from this subcommittee. So what has happened now as of this year, they have actually begun to implement. We've been implementing plans for a while. I just wanted to provide you with the guidelines that they are requiring on the state level.
Thank you. And your
We're getting there. It's still, like I said, we're running the race. I think the state is requiring a lot more data, and this is regarding to the limited English proficiency. We have really been focusing on racial disparities versus the state is really looking at the gap of language, which we have not really been focusing on as a county. We've emphasized it. And then we are also, as a county, been looking at person-centered planning, and that's another component as well.
If I'm not mistaken, this cultural and linguistic competency has evolved over a period of time, and Peter may have been one of the first to implement this, because we did it before it was required to do, maybe not quite as extensive as it is, but that used to be a way that we, an evaluation that we place on our grants, whether people had those, and that was even before for access. Again, we were already doing it. So I'm really impressed with how comprehensive and extensive these sets of guidelines have become over a period of time. And with the linguistic component, I'm reminded of a conversation Mark and I just had about immigrants coming into there. So this is a pretty exciting new plan. These guys that just talked to us, are they going to be subject to this as well?
Any person that receives funding from the Mental Health Board, and if they're receiving funding from the Department of Human Services, yes.
So we'll be evaluated on these same things here?
Yes.
Okay.
I couldn't tell from reading this whether or not there's attention paid to the actual numbers of people served from minorities or the target groups over time. Is there some sort of actual look at not just language and planning and words on a paper, but actual human beings who are served?
So through the utilization data that's already being collected, I'm not sure if we have actually paid attention in that manner. So maybe now we can begin to look at what it looks like over time.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
I would like to see that because
It's already been it's being collected now.
Yeah,
so
I
we
mean,
definitely
that's the goal,
have that.
It
yeah.
seems to me like we're not just doing this in order to have the paper produced. So we want to see, so it would be interesting actually to see how that translates to, we should expect improvements over time in the reach of services to these populations, I would hope. So thanks for attending to that.
I don't know what happened. We have quite a, several years of data related to demographic data and specific to programs as well as by, and then aggregated by agency. At different points in time, typically in October, I provide that to the board. So we can go back and look at that. And what you'll see is some programs have very high percentages of African American and participation, and other programs not so much. The change over time, I couldn't speak to whether or not it's increased or decreased. I would say just in general, it's probably stayed fairly consistent. But you will see, like in our annual report, we include a pie chart related to demographics, and race and ethnicity is one of those charts. And you'll find overall that probably over 30% of the population is African American.
Yeah, just a quick comment on that. Many of the agencies, when we see the data, they'll make the point that, the minority population in Champaign County is, 12%, 13%, and, you know, 13% of their clients are, you know, are African-American, let's say. I think what's important to remember is that that doesn't necessarily mean that an agency is culturally competent or that they are actually meeting the need, just because the numbers are the, you know, similar to what the demographics are. And I think that's why I think we need to not rely on that. I mean, a good example is the people that are involved with mental illness that are also involved in the jail population. You would expect that that would be a much higher number. And the question is, are we reaching everyone, or are, you know, does everyone have access? And so that the numbers just don't necessarily tell you that. They're good to have, and we should look at them, but doesn't necessarily mean you're culturally competent.
No, well, if I may, what I would like to see at some point is that there's some relationship between the considerable effort that Chandra is putting into increasing the cultural competence and the actual delivery of services. We ought to expect that those should be correlated. We ought to be able to look for ways to have that be an effective, essentially, intervention is what it is. So
just over the past 6 years, you to say this, like, organizations have expanded their populations and how they've done outreach. So it's like over several types of things. So at one time, you may not have, and this is just an example. At one time, you may have only had two organizations that attended a program that had a target audience of African Americans that provided services. Now you may have 20 who actually know. They go every year, they engage in this group, provide them with information of an underrepresented population. So when you look at it from that perspective, you have to look at access, you have to look at who's utilizing the service as well, but that may not always be counted in particular data that we collect. So that is why those plans are in place. So they put the plans in place where they say, okay, we're gonna reach this group this year, then they up it and may go a little bit deeper. So that has changed. From when I first began, organizations didn't even know that they had a cultural competency plan. I wanted to make sure I started with at the basics so that we could bring everyone up at the same level. There were employees who didn't even know that they have a cultural competency plan. You ask probably any employee now, they know something about it, which is a huge change, because I had no idea that we even had a plan. So that was like where we first started. So it's definitely grown over time.
Are we ready to move on? This has been really, really valuable for us. You all saw the notice of funding availability that was published in the News Gazette, and looks okay to most people. Does it look okay? Mm-hmm. Looks okay.
Hope so.
All right. It's published. It's out there. All right. Meeting schedules, you see, are there. Are there any major changes? Well, just tack that one up on your bulletin board. Are there any board announcements? Tom?
Deb, I know you did this earlier, and I just want to take the time to welcome our new board members. From an individual perspective, I think it's always a time that's pretty exciting that we have new board members. I'm going to miss our old ones tremendously, but welcome to our board, and I hope you're going to enjoy what we do.